Hello once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me here on this Friday, November 10th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour or so. Let's go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Glad to have you with me as we wrap up another week here on Bang the Book Radio. Two segments today. You know them. You love them. Westgate Super Contest Selection segment for Week 10 with myself and Sports Cheeto, my Bang the Book podcast entry, sitting at 24 and 21 here as we head into Week 10. Also in today's show, Brent from DSI Sportsbook with this week's version of the odds report. He'll tell us where the sharp money is in both the college football and the NFL betting markets. So a great couple of segments to wrap things up here on what has been a fantastic week of shows. Don't forget, over at bangthebook.com, plenty of great stuff to help you out here this weekend. UFC Fight Night preview, NASCAR previews for both the Xfinity Series and the Cup Series race, all sorts of game previews for college football, every NFL game previewed, daily NHL picks, daily NBA previews, NBA totals picks, tons of stuff that you can use to bang the books here this weekend over there at the website. So please check that out. Scroll through all the things that we've got, college football power ratings, NFL power ratings, just so much going on over there. Please make sure that you check all that stuff out. Share it with your friends. Share it with your coworkers. Shed some light on the greatness that is bangthebook.com. We're very proud of all the work that we do over there. We've got a great group of writers. Hopefully you enjoy some of that content as much as I do. Also, while you're over there, take a look at those contests that we offer. Free contests, just sign up using your email address. Daily Streaker contest, monthly pick of the day, top monthly win percentage, top ROI, top number of units won, cash prizes. Again, doesn't cost you anything to get involved, but you get cash prizes if you come out on top or put together one of those streaks in those contests. So over at bangthebook.com, those are available to you. And like I said, you know, if you're somebody that's already betting dollar amounts, it's great for you to have a free contest to play around with. But if you're somebody that's trying to get involved, just trying to get interested in this a little bit, try your hand at those contests. See how you do. You still get to go through the process of breaking down games and submitting a pick. You just don't have to put any money on the line. And that can be something that'll help you as we go into future seasons with college football, the NFL, whatever the case may be. Finally, this and every edition of Bang the Book Radio is presented by DSI Sportsbook. Head on over to DSI, use that promo code BTB and the number 25. You'll get a $25 free bet just for signing up, 100% deposit match bonus for the sportsbook, and 100% deposit match bonus for the live casino as well. At BetDSI, it's only a game until you bet it. Two segments on today's show. The first, our Westgate Super Contest Selection segment with myself and Sports Cheetah. Four of my picks look like they're going to be made here on today's segment. And I'll have to pick one more from the leans that I've got. But we'll chat a little bit about that whole Colts situation last week with the Colts and Texans, all that line value that was out there, and also some of the other challenges for Week 10. So without further ado, here is that Super Contest segment with myself and Sports Cheetah. All right, I'm joined now by Sports Cheetah from WagerTalk.com and also PodcastU.Vegas for our Week 10 Westgate Super Contest Selection segment. Preston, how's it going today, man?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Appreciate your time as always here, and hopefully I can roll over a little bit of that momentum from last week. Went 4-1. I'm now 24-21 with the Bang the Book podcast entry, bangthebook.com entry owned by my boss, 25-19-1 after a 3-2 week. And Cheetah, it's really not a big surprise to see the field come in at 57.22% last week, 7,225 winners, 5,402 losers, 943 pushes. 1,675 of the 2,748 entries took the Indianapolis Colts last week. So when that happens, you've got a touchdown worth of line value. 57% isn't all that surprising.
Yeah, I mean, if majority of everyone at least got one, you know, so they're basically, if they go 50, you know, 500, the rest of the four, they're going, you know, that's a 60% win rate going 3-2. So, yeah, not surprising. 57% is probably still a little high because, I mean, in the end, they could have easily not covered the number. They went outright, so it didn't end up mattering. But, you know, I'm curious what the number would be if, say, Houston actually covered and all the Indianapolis bets lost. I'm not sure. I think people still picked pretty well outside of that game, too, for it to be as high as 57%.
Yeah, and that's pretty much what it was. The top three consensus plays, Indianapolis, the Rams and Dallas, accounted for 3,443 of the 7,225 winning picks. So the fact that the top three consensus actually came through, you know, very, very significant, obviously, for the for that segment of the field. 48.23% overall now on the season. And just to follow up with your question here, 1,675 entries took the Colts, 70 took the Houston Texans. So, you know, either those were people that were looking to get the two-game swing or people that played the Thursday night game and didn't know about the Deshaun Watson injury, whatever the case may be. Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, we had 1,605 more entries on the Colts than the Texans. So, yeah, that would have made a very, very significant change, to say the least. But, like I said, 48.23% overall. Last week in the Super Contest Gold, 222 winners, 212 losers, 26 pushes, 51.15%. 55 of the 94 entries took the Colts, so that's 58.51% on Indianapolis in that stale line value, 48.86% overall. You know, I don't think it's a big surprise that a higher percentage of the traditional Super Contest field took Indianapolis than the Gold, is it?
Yeah, that's not a surprise to me at all. I was curious what the number was going to be. I hadn't actually seen it myself, but you know, a little over half used it in the Gold, whereas it was 70%+ in the traditional. You know, most people, I think, they're doing the Gold. They are more familiar, I guess, with the like strategy and the game theory to it all, and they probably know you're not supposed to technically use the Colts if you're trying to play from behind and catch up, because you're hoping that everyone up at the top is using it and that it doesn't cover and you get another point somewhere else. So, yeah, not surprising to see that come in lower than the traditional.
All right, well, let's talk a little bit more about that game, because it's such a unique situation, and it's really something that can only happen here, you know, in these handicapping contests. I mean, I'm sure there were some people out there in the betting market that did take the Colts early in the week at plus 13 and wound up getting, you know, significant amount of line value there in that. But I will say, you know, obviously, as I told listeners, you know, because we found out about the Deshaun Watson thing maybe 10 minutes after you and I were done recording the Super Contest segment last week. But, you know, I had a pretty big dilemma in terms of deciding what to do with that game, because, like you said, from a game theory standpoint, and for somebody that's trying to play catch up, I mean, I am 8 points off the lead, and I think the top 50 is 28 points right now, so I'm 4 points out of cashing. You could make a very strong case that it's in my best interest not to take that Colts game and hope that somehow Houston covers that number. And of course, they came nowhere close to doing it. But I did have a really hard time with that in terms of narrowing down my card last week, because I liked the Rams and I knew they were going to be a consensus pick. I liked Dallas. I knew they were going to be a consensus pick because there was a little bit of line value on that game as well. And I figured Denver would be a very popular side since I was taking them, because they were plus 8.5 and they came down to 7. So that was one of the challenges that I had last week, was eventually I couldn't pass on the line value with the Colts, but because I knew that so many of my other picks were going to be popular, there was actually a chance I'd leave it off.
Yeah, I'm honestly, I was, and we were talking about it just right before you hit record, and you like, well, I went 4-1, you know, and I don't feel like I made up any ground. And it's probably to the extent that just so many people went at least 3-2, and there were going to be plenty of people that went 4-1 or 5-0. And so it that's what makes it tough, is you feel good because you had a good week, but when everyone's getting the same win that you got, it's ultimately worthless. Now, not everybody did, but, you know, there was 30% of the people that didn't. So you have, I guess, a slight advantage there, but you have to think that the people on the top that you're trying to catch up to, even a wider margin or a larger margin, a majority of those people were using the Colts just because they needed the win to stay up top. So it's generally, I would guess, the majority of the 30% that didn't use Colts were in the, you know, middle pack to the bottom of the current standings. And so when you're trying to play catch up and with one of those, it ultimately ends up, you know, not meaning anything, and you're costing yourself a game, I think, of the remaining games possible to try to catch up. And so, yeah, it's tough. I ended up using the Thursday night game, and I didn't use the Colts-Texans matchup just because I didn't like it. And then the Watson injury news came out later that day. So I was saved in that regard that I didn't have to make the decision, but I still was, I'm pretty certain I never would have even considered the Colts. When it comes down to it, I just think there's too much value to give up when you're only getting 5 games a week over 17 weeks, and now, you know, we're headed into week 10, we're just over halfway done or whatever. Like, they're just giving up like 3 or 4% of your remaining potential points by picking that game when, you know, everyone ahead of you is picking it. It just doesn't end up adding up in my head. So I always try to stay away from those. not even try. I do stay away from those. And then last week I would have stayed away, but I didn't have to since I had submitted Jets anyways Thursday early afternoon.
And that is the challenge, too. Like you said, I mean, you only have 40 picks left in this thing to make now. I mean, you already made 45 of the 85 selections. And, yeah, I mean, that was a point that it's great that you got it, but so did a lot of other people. And like you said, a lot of other people that got it are probably the ones in front of you. Because if you're up there, you know, in the top 50, if you're in the money, if you're in the top 100, whatever, you're going to take that game because you want to make sure you get that point because you don't have to play catch-up. So, you know, that there was a lot that went into that decision, and I kind of reluctantly came to the final call to take the Colts because ultimately I couldn't really decide what five games I wanted to use. And I wound up making the cut of the Buccaneers, which worked out for me because they didn't cover and I would have went 3-2 instead of 4-1. So, you know, it's amazing to look at all of the different considerations week after week in this thing. It's not just, you know, handicapping the NFL card. I mean, you're handicapping the contest, and that only goes up and increases in importance because as you get deeper into the contest, and like you just talked about, if you start giving up a point to go on the same side as everybody else, you run out of times to make up that point.
Yeah, no, it's exactly why, unless like you brought up and I was saying earlier, unless you're already in that 50s, maybe a good gauge. Like if you're in the top 50, you want the points to stay up. But if you're in the middle of the pack or lower, you have to play catch up. And so when you're giving up a percentage of the allotted points you can even get by picking a game, everyone's going to have the same side. It just, it's the real strategy to it all. I would say if you are in, like people that are listening, like a lot of them probably do like their own individual pools of friends or family or whatever, work pools that use the contest lines. In that regard, like if you're one of like 20 entries, and, you know, say you're in fifth or sixth or seventh, and you're probably playing with people that aren't even as into it, and, like, maybe they don't even know that it's a super stale line. I think in that situation, you're fine just taking the Colts because it's a huge edge, and you only have four or five people you need to pass up for the second half of the season. But in one like the actual super contest where there's a little more money at stake, for one, there's people that generally know what they're doing, and also there's just so many entries. That's when you need to really try to differentiate yourself on how you're attacking the five games that you select. But I wanted to make that point for people that are listening that aren't in the actual super contest but do similar pools on a much smaller scale. I think the actual strategy would be different than in those as far as like what's optimal. So I think if you're in a smaller pool, say like 10, 20, even 30 or 40 people, and you use the Colts, actually that's fine depending on where you're at in the standings. But for the big one, I think it's just there's so many entries and stuff. You have so much ground to make up and so many people to pass that it is more optimal not to use the Colts in those spots.
Let me ask you about this. I know you said that you didn't use the Colts for your individual entry because you played the Thursday night game, and like you said, you probably wouldn't have used them anyway. What about in your team entry? I mean, is that a discussion that you guys had? What decision did you ultimately come to?
My team entry, my favorite play was Jets, so that was my pick, so we all had to get it in by Thursday, and we didn't even have to have the discussion. We absolutely wouldn't have used Colts, though, either. Like, I think everyone would have been on board with just passing on Colts and rooting for, you know, the Texans to win by 14 or whatever, and, you know, a good portion of the time, I mean, people think, oh, it's like, that's never going to happen. I mean, you think of how much real variance there is within, like, a touchdown. You know, if you're saying that the spread at 6.5 is 50-50, you know, them winning by 14 or more is going to happen like one out of three times or maybe slightly more than that. So it's like that happens a ton. Like there's a lot of like times when everyone loses the Colts bet, and that's just so much added value to not picking that game when you really break down. Because I think you see 6 or 7 points and you're just enamored with it because you're trying to get every little edge and you're used to betting in real life, right? Just where you have to take the best numbers and this and that. And so you see 6 points of value and you just think, oh, I have to fire away. But when it's all said and done, you know, 6 points is a big edge, but it's not like it's something where the Texans couldn't have just won by two touchdowns or more. I mean, they're doing that, I think, more often than one out of three times. So I guess you got to kind of look at things that way too. And so for us, I think it would have been a no-brainer for the team entry not to use the Colts in that way either. But we, again, submitted Thursday, so it didn't end up being a conversation.
Well, and maybe this is a topic for another day here, because I do want to run through my picks. But one thing I do want to know a little bit here, and again, we can maybe take a deeper dive into this in terms of a math standpoint, is the number of people chasing stale line value here higher than it should be? I mean, obviously, we don't know exactly who's doing what and who's picking what, but is it sort of an overblown angle in this contest?
I'm not sure. Yeah, I would have to go back and look at, like, which games were, you know, more consensus and which ones were the stale numbers. My guess is a lot of people for the first half of the season in the Super Contest try to use the stale ones that they think, you know, the market is implying there's an edge, and they're just trying to accumulate wins to put themselves in a good spot come, you know, week 9, week 10, week 11, and then they'll have to kind of maybe adjust from that point based on where they're positioned in the standings. So I'm guessing there's probably some of that. Not everybody. Honestly, when it comes down to it, I just try to pick the five games that I think have the best chance of winning early on. And there's the occasional, you know, after a few weeks, if you're down already and you had a slow start, then you want to start looking at some of the game theory things and which ones to stay away from if you can help it, and you know, half point picks or not, or whole numbers, this and that. But I think I'd have to go through and see how many people are actually using the more stale lines, like not the obvious ones like the Colts, but like the Broncos were my third favorite game last week. So I used them, but I was pretty sure because like you, it moved from 8.5 to 7, like a lot of people were going to use the Broncos. So it was kind of a weird spot. But I only, you know, I'd bet the Packers and the Jets and the Broncos, and I was, you know, well, I should probably just use it for the contest. And it was on this on Thursday anyway. So I had to get it in, but that's one where, you know, if I have a card where I like 6 or 7 games, then that's even one where most people are probably using Broncos, and I wouldn't typically do it unless I really, really liked it as an actual real bet that I made in real life on the side of the contest, which I did, and I got killed and had no chance. But I think that you have to kind of differentiate those too, where you're trying to decide, okay, the Colts is like 6 points, everyone's going to use it, but there's still those ones that only move like a point or a point and a half. I think the Falcons and Panthers was another one where a lot of people were using Falcons and that lost. That's one where I definitely would have actually ended up betting the Panthers on Sunday just when I got the +3. I thought it was kind of a crazy move. And so a lot of people did lose them probably on the Falcons getting a point or a point and a half, whatever it was in the contest. And that's another one like I just never would have probably considered it unless I just loved the side, kind of like I did the Broncos. But I'm curious now that you asked if there are, I guess, more precise numbers we could see, which consensus are like the ones that were the most stale, and seeing if there is some sort of correlation there. It wouldn't surprise me, especially in the first half of the Super Contest.
Well, and I think about it too in terms of, you know, anytime there's a game that lands on the number, and especially if it's a game that draws a lot of attention, how many times do you see some media member tweeting out Vegas knows in terms of, you know, the game falling around the spread? And that's something that I kind of think about here in terms of this line value, and in terms of, you know, obviously not all line value is created the same. I mean, a move from, you know, if the Packers go down to 4.5 instead of 5.5, not overly significant to grab the Packers at 5.5. Now, if you've got a game where the Giants go to 3.5, when you can get them at 2.5 here, that's a little bit more significant. But also, you know, the thing I'm kind of wondering about in terms of the line value as well is, you know, the number doesn't always matter. I mean, sometimes 2.5, 3.5 are going to cover. You know, the Colts obviously last week covered 13 and 6.5, you know, because they won the game outright. So that's another thing that kind of factors into this whole line value discussion is, you know, how often does that line value or even the line itself end up mattering?
Yeah, it's true. It seems like it's, you know, once every 2 weeks, maybe you'll have a game that, you know, it ends up mattering. And if you're betting every single game, it probably happens more often. If you're betting earlier in the week versus later when you pick, it'll come into play, and that's why getting the best number is important. So you have that extra little edge on the times that it does matter. But if you're only betting, say, 2 to 4 or 5 games a week, you know, it's probably not going to happen every, you know, once a month that it actually maybe matters. So 1 out of 20 games or something like that is probably a good estimate on when your number, if you're assuming you beat the close and you add a point of value, like how often it'll actually come into play. And if it's always 3s and 7s, then that's going to be more often than 1 out of 20. But you're making points on, like, yeah, if you bet +5.5, closes 4, how many times does it land 5? That's not very often at all. So kind of overall, I think a general estimation, I'd say, is like 1 out of 20 times you bet your your number will come into play, whether you took a poor number or a good number early. That's probably about right.
Well, of course, one of them was that damn Jets game that I played 2 weeks ago, where it was 4.5 in the contest,
yep.
6 in the market. Of course, it falls 5 because why the hell not? But, you know, so, hey, I'm lucky, right? I fell victim to that one time out of 20 or whatever that's actually going to happen. All right, let's look at the Week 10 card here. And I actually like this card this week, which is probably a kiss of death, which means I'll go 1-4, 0-5. But there are several games that I do like here this week. Beginning with number 12 in the rotation order, that's the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who are +2.5 hosting the New York Jets. Now, we didn't really see a number for this game early in the week. I think Five Dimes had it. I want to say pick 'em or something like that, or maybe -3 on the Tampa Bay side. Truthfully, I don't even remember what it was. But you know, Jameis Winston announced out with the shoulder. Then Mike Evans is announced out with a suspension. And we see a pretty significant move out there on this game, at least in terms of the books that did have a number up. But for me, you know, if I look at this game, I don't think the drop-off from an injured Jameis Winston to Ryan Fitzpatrick is really that big of a deal. This year, Jameis Winston, 61.4% completion percentage with a 10-6 ratio. Well, Ryan Fitzpatrick from 2011 to 2015 was at 61.3%, 110 touchdowns to 74 interceptions. I'm going to eliminate 2016 there as a little bit of an outlier because that was just a weird situation with the Jets. He signed real late, didn't really want to play there, all that type of thing. So, you know, injured Jameis Winston was basically a little bit worse than healthy Ryan Fitzpatrick over a five-year span from 2011 to 2015. So I don't think that any adjustment needs to be made here, but one has been made in the marketplace, and I think it creates some value on Tampa Bay.
Yeah, there probably is a little bit of value. I think Evans is maybe a bigger deal than, you know, the drop-off from Winston to Fitzpatrick, if there even is one. I will say that, you know, as far as the quarterback goes, last week they were in the second half, they were playing the Saints. There was a lot of stalled drives from Tampa Bay in the first half, like 3 inside the Saints 40 where they had to punt short and maybe a turnover or something, and the Saints were moving it fine. So the total, when the news came out that it was Fitzpatrick, dropped from 27 to 26.5. I actually got a 25 here in town, and I played over because I thought is Winston really an injured Winston, like you're saying? Is he really that much better than Fitzpatrick? And, you know, they're probably going to be able to score, and the Saints have been moving it fine. And sure enough, like in 5 minutes, there's 2 touchdowns, and I'm thinking, all right, this is great. And then they each missed a field goal so that when the touchdown in the fourth quarter happened, it only landed 21 instead of 27. So I lost, but I was – I mean, that's like evidence of me saying the same thing as you are, where I thought the fact that the total moved down from 27 to 25 at Westgate is where it was, I think, I thought it was insane just because of a Winston to Fitzpatrick drop-off. And they were going to have to throw a lot and play from behind because they were down big at halftime. So anyways, I thought it was a good bet. And maybe it was, and more often than not it would pay off, but it didn't. But it goes to, you know, show here in this game with the total and I think the side. Both are, I think, overreactions. And so for me, you know, it might be a good teaser piece if people are out there betting teasers a lot. You rarely will hear me say that, but the 2.5 up to an 8.5, unless it got to 3, which I don't see it getting all the way to 3 by itself. If it did, then you're better off just betting +3 straight. But if it stays at 2, 2.5, or even, you know, 1.5, then this would probably be one of the teaser sides, maybe like once a month, where I really think is going to offer some value with Tampa at home, Fitzpatrick, and, you know, a Jets team that they've hung around in games it seems like they shouldn't, and they've won games they shouldn't. They've also lost games that maybe you expected them they were going to win. So it's one that probably ends up going close, going down to the wire. And I wouldn't hate having a +8.5 in my pocket.
Another thing I like about this game too here is that for Tampa Bay, I mean, their defensive numbers do not look good. But Levante David missed a couple of games. Quan Alexander missed 4 games. He's probably the best all-around defensive player in the back 7. Obviously, Gerald McCoy might be the best player on this defense. But this Jets offense is pretty average. You know, the way that they move the football, it is impressive what they've been doing in terms of a high completion rate. You know, they've had some good running plays. They've had some good short throws. But, you know, they lose a wide receiver in Jeremy Curley here, who didn't have a ton of targets, but it's still going to elevate somebody else on this roster into a little bit bigger of a role, and that may not work out too well for them. You've got the Fitzpatrick angle against his old team. You've got a Jets team on the bye next week coming off of a division win. Yeah, they have some extra time, and I know that's been a really good betting angle for people playing that team off the Thursday night game. But one final point I'll make about Tampa Bay here, this is their only home game until December 10th. So this is a spot that teams generally like to circle. If they're not playing at home for a month, this is a game that they want. And I'm going to take them here to take care of business in this one. I do think they win the game outright. Like I said, I don't think the Winston to Fitzpatrick thing is that big of a deal. Evans being out hurts, but you know, Fitzpatrick's a guy that's smart enough to go through his progressions and find somebody. So I like Tampa Bay here. And again, you know, I think it's interesting because I liked Tampa Bay last week, didn't take them. Maybe I dodged a bullet there, and maybe I'll be able to pick one up here with Tampa Bay this week. All right, the next game I'm looking at here on the card, I got the Buffalo Bills. They're +3 at home against the New Orleans Saints. So like I said, I talked about maybe going up against the Saints last week, decided not to do it. That worked out in my favor. Maybe this one here is the week to go against them. And I also like this one a little bit because I think it's a little bit contrarian. And we've seen favorites and trendy dogs do very, very well here over the last few weeks. That's something where the luck generally tends to run out for the public when it comes to the NFL. So I think this is a pretty good spot in that regard. But more importantly than that, which is mostly just an anecdotal type of thing, you know, the Saints have to go on the road to Buffalo. It's going to be chilly. It's going to be rainy. It's going to be damp. Wind chill in the upper 30s. Not really something that Drew Brees likes. And I certainly think as he continues to age, it's something that he's going to like even less. The Bills are methodical on offense. They can slow the game down. They can run the ball. New Orleans can't stop the run. 4.7 yards per carry allowed. Bills should get back Charles Clay this week, who has only played 5 games this year, and he's still their leading receiver in yardage. So, yeah, on one hand, that's an indictment of the Buffalo offense, but also it's nice for them to get him back. They are off of extra rest as well from that division loss to the Jets on Thursday. So I think it's a little bit of a bounce-back spot here for Buffalo, and I think the situation sets up well with Brees having to come north and play in some suboptimal conditions for him.
Yeah, you know, I really like the angle outside of the fact that you're getting a 3 when it's, you know, it was at least 2.5 in market most places, and it's come up to 3 now. So maybe there won't be the advantage there in the half point when it's relative to market come Friday night or whenever you're turning them in. But, you know, the Bills are a team that I think just kind of performed better than people expected and anticipated entering the season. Even, you know, their last, say, like 6 games here I'm looking at, they lost to the Jets last week, and that was a good spot, I think, for the Jets. But the Bills, and so they have some extra time to prep for this game, for one. But the Bills, they beat the Raiders by like 20. They beat the Buccaneers. They lost close game to the Bengals on the road. They beat the Falcons on the road. They beat the Broncos at home by 10. Like, they beat some pretty decent quality teams. The Saints have been so hot. I tried betting against them last week, too, and I use the Buccaneers. This is another one where I think it's definitely Bills or nothing. And since it is a 3 on the card here for the Super Contest, I imagine that's one that I'll end up using, since I don't have 5 that I love this time around, and I'm probably going to be scratching for a 4th and 5th. And that's one of the, I guess, 3 that I've looked at so far that I agree with as far as your side. And I don't know if – you know, Brees, his splits obviously at home and away are pretty drastic because he plays in the dome versus playing outside. But even outside, it's, you know, it's probably going to be cold in Buffalo. That's another level of outside rather than just playing, you know, in, you know, the air. It's that it's going to be cold and crisp. I don't know if it's going to be wet or anything either. But that's definitely going to take its toll. And I think I'm shocked to see this number actually come up from 2.5 to almost 3 flat places. And I think those are the right side, especially if you can get that field goal -110.
Yeah, it looks like it's going to be in the low 40s here, chance of showers during the game. And I can attest, being somebody that lives in a place where the weather is really bad for about 8 months out of the year, that damp 40-degree stuff is almost worse than snow. It just feels gross to be outside. I would rather it be 25, low humidity, you know, snowflakes flying around, that type of thing. Because that chilly dampness is just – it's just awful to be in. And you know, if you're somebody that plays in a dome, you're somebody that lives in a warm-weather climate, that's just not an ideal situation for you. Also, you've got a New Orleans team here that's won 6 in a row, all by 8 or more points. And, you know, in the NFL, people call it parity, people call it inconsistency, whatever they want. It's hard to run together a string like that and then keep it going week after week after week. And I know that the Saints are playing better. I love the Saints coming into this season. I thought their defense would be much better. I lost on them in each of the first 2 weeks of the season, but I've gone back to the well a couple times since. You know, they've played an injured Jameis Winston. They've played Mitch Trubisky. They played Brett Hundley. Stafford in that wild game where the Lions put up 38 and gave up some defensive touchdowns and all that. Jay Cutler, Cam Newton back in week 3 before he got it figured out, and then he lost it again. But the Saints really haven't been tested by too many good offenses. And the Bills aren't a good offense. But the Bills, they take care of the football, and they can run the football. And that's a dimension that, you know, New Orleans doesn't really get a whole lot and certainly hasn't gotten here over the last few weeks. So I think Buffalo controls the line of scrimmage. I'm a little worried about it being on the key number of 3 in the event that it does wind up being a push. But still, I think the Bills are the right team here. And like I said, I think this one's a little bit contrarian from the field. So maybe it'll be against the consensus.
You know, I think that this is an interesting one. I had someone trying to argue against me because I like the Jets. He actually liked the Bills. You mentioned how they take care of the ball. Going into that game last week, he was talking about the turnover margin for the Bills. And I forget, I'm forgetting who the coach is that's running the defense. But anyway, he was at Carolina for 3 years prior. You probably all remember his name. But they had, like, really good turnover margin and turnover differential in Carolina for 3 straight years. And then going into the Jets game, I think the Bills already were, like, plus 12 or something in turnovers. And I said a lot of the fumble stuff is luck. And you look back historically, if you drop a fumble on offense or whether you're on defense, it's basically 50-50 exactly on who recovers it. So if you look back and you're saying, okay, well, the Bills are plus 12, but they've fumbled 0 times and recovered 8 fumbles, you know, that's partly weird variance. You look back at Carolina's seasons where they were plus 19 or plus 20 in turnovers, and that was part of it. But at some point, I gave them some credit to the point where if this type of defense, the coach, his name's escaping me, but at 4 years in a row of being able to do this with your defenses, maybe he's coaching them better at, you know, forcing more fumbles, or ultimately they're able to just play a defense and scheme that relies on big plays like that. And they didn't have them against the Jets, and which is why the Jets ended up winning that game. But it does kind of feel like if Breeze is throwing and it's wet and the conditions are bad, or, you know, even, you know, the guys running the football, Ingram fumbled twice the other day. It was 2 games ago. I think it was against the Bears in like the end of the game in the fourth quarter. Maybe that'll come back into his head, and now you're trying to run in the rain. And by the way, I mean, we talked about the defense. The Saints' rush defense isn't very good. The Bills is. If it comes down to a running battle, the Bills are tied for 7th in opponent yards per play on the ground, and New Orleans is 29th. They give up a full yard more per play. So that's an advantage, Bills, too. But anyway, back to the turnover thing. I think the Bills are this kind of strangely, weirdly plus turnover margin team that – people might be fading because generally you would just fade that type of positivity. But you made the point, now getting back to what made me think of it, they take care of the ball on offense, and that's part of it too, is when Tyrod Taylor's only thrown and turned it over twice all year, then your turnover margin is going to be good too. And obviously turnover margin is correlated to, you know, outscoring your opponent and winning games. So if people didn't realize or know that before, the Bills are definitely one of the better teams offensively taking care of the ball. It's not the best so far in the league, and then they're one of the best at forcing turnovers, at least to this point. So they're going to be in games, like, no matter what, the way that they're at least stylistically approaching things on offense and defense.
Yeah, that's Sean McDermott that you're talking about. And in his 9 years as either defensive coordinator or a head coach, his team has finished in the top 5 in interceptions 6 times. So he started as a defensive backs coach, went up to linebackers coach, then became a defensive coordinator. Also, Leslie Frazier, who's their defensive coordinator, was a longtime defensive backs coach as well. So they're just coaching this. It's a scheme thing. Maybe they're disguising coverages, whatever the case may be. But yeah, if you've got guys that, you know how to get defenses to force turnovers, then they can carry something like this. So I agree. I think people are fading that with the Bills, and it is something that I've looked at as well and have considered as a fade. But, you know, I'm definitely going to take a different look and probably a different approach to it now that you talked about that. And I think it is a really, really strong point to make. So I do like the Bills here, plus the 3. We'll move to a couple of very, very ugly games here this week. This is an ugly card of dogs. So if you're looking for favorites, I'm sorry, but you're not going to find them here. The Cleveland Browns, they're getting 12 points here against the Detroit Lions. They're bad. Believe me, nobody knows that more than I do with everything that I have to hear from friends and local media and all that type of stuff. They are coming off the bye, But this Browns defense, pretty underrated, just 4.9 yards per play allowed. Now, I understand that they're very good against the run. Detroit doesn't run the football. But this Greg Williams defense has been coming around throughout the season. And, you know, I know they play the safeties way off the ball, and a lot of times I don't get it. But still, they're doing a good job of limiting really big plays. And when you're getting 12 points and you're able to limit big plays, that's going to keep you in the game. The Browns have had success running the football, so maybe they sustain a little bit of offense here in this one. But I just don't think that the Lions are in a good position to cover a number as big chalk. They had the win against Green Bay on the road, so you pick up a road division win. Now you got a short week. Then you play the Bears the following week, and then the Vikings on Thanksgiving. So I just think this is one of those traditional flat spots for Detroit here where this game is about getting in and getting out with a win, and they don't care by how many points. Whereas I think the Browns coming off the bye give a pretty good effort here.
Yeah, I agree. So I bet against Detroit. I like the Packers quite a bit last week, and it's one of those where whether you're betting yourself or you're giving plays out to other people to bet, they're betting their money on it. You lose a betting or backing a team one or two times in a row, and you're scared to do it again. And so, like, you know, Detroit burned me last week, but this is one where you have to bet Cleveland. I think it's one of there's two games on the board that I'm looking at that I'll actually have my money on, and this is one of them. So I agree with you wholeheartedly at plus 11, 11 and a half maybe in the contest. I actually forgot what the number is in the contest, but it's the right side. It is, and you know, what it comes down to, the number is just too high. You're getting 12 in the contest. Wow, I forgot about it was actually 12 earlier in the week, so that's an extra point there. Hopefully that doesn't get to the point where it's 10 and then everyone's using the Browns at plus 12. Sometimes you're rooting against the early week moves. You want them to move on Sunday or something. Regardless, yeah, I can't disagree with anything here on this spot off the bye. And I'm going to look up real quick. I'm pretty sure Cleveland's still by far the best team in the league in opponents' yards per rush. They're 2.9 yards per carry. Second best is Denver at 3.4. So they're no one can run against them. And that sometimes, I guess, one thing I guess would have some sort of reservation here back in Cleveland would be that Detroit never really can run the ball very well. And whenever they just flip the switch to, all right, Stafford throw every time, is when the Lions start scoring points. But they're pretty stubborn for like the first half of football. And they generally will throw in the second half a ton, whether they're from behind or even if it's a close game, they just seem to make that adjustment at halftime. They're not going to be able to run the ball early. They're going to be stubborn and try to run the ball early. So anyways, for the betting side of everything, I'm going to be looking at backing Browns, at least splitting my bet full game in first half and potentially majority on the first half, because I do anticipate Detroit to play slower early like they've done. And whether it's close or maybe they're even behind, you know, in that second half, they'll start throwing more often, which is where you can beat the Browns defensively. And so, anyway, Browns first half, I'm not sure if it's quite 7. As far as the number goes, it's probably more like 6.5. I'll pull that up in check. I'm not sure if many people even have first half lines out. I am seeing it right now, and for some reason I can't see it on the board. So, oh, there it is. It is 7 at one place, but it's mostly going to be 6.5, I think. But that's worth betting, I think, or at least putting some of your action on if you want to play the Browns.
And I think you get a little bit of recency bias in this number, too, in the sense that Detroit looked really, really good on Sunday Night Football offensively with 482 yards, but then they couldn't get in the end zone. And last week they have 417 yards, 353 through the air. But Green Bay is a mess right now with what's going on with their offense and, of course, all the injuries that they have. So with the short week, with two division games coming up, and that game against the Bears, if the Bears win this week, you know, becomes a fairly big game. And then, of course, the short week annual Thanksgiving game against Minnesota, a huge game. It just feels like one of those spots for Detroit where they don't really show up here. And one other thing, you talk about them being stubborn and forcing the run in the first half. What if they're trying to protect the double-digit lead here in the second half and they can't run the ball on the Browns? Maybe the back door opens up for the Browns if they're able to, you know, actually move the football. But that's another consideration here, too. When you're up by 12 in the NFL, you know, you're kind of looking ahead to the next week already. And if they can't run the ball to put this game away in the second half, maybe it gives Cleveland an extra possession or two to try and pick up that garbage time touchdown. Who knows if it'll be Deshaun Kizer or Cody Kessler, or I don't know if they roll Bernie Kosar out of retirement or something like that. But maybe the Browns should have some opportunities here in the second half if the back door is needed. One more game that I really like for the card here. And again, this one's pretty ugly, but I think that I'm on the right track with this one. The Miami Dolphins on Monday Night Football here, they're catching 9 against the Carolina Panthers. To me, this looks like a number that's just too high. Miami's defense has played pretty well here throughout the season, but the Carolina offense has not. And that's a big part of the equation here for this one, in this game for me. You know, Cam Newton, terrible at the outset, decent in the middle, not so great here over the last few weeks. Jonathan Stewart and Christian McCaffrey each have less than 3 yards per carry, so they can't run the football at all. Dolphins don't have a bye, but they get the extra day here to give themselves a little bit more time to prepare, a little bit more time to rest. Carolina has their bye next week, so maybe a little bit of a look ahead there off of back-to-back division wins against Tampa Bay and Atlanta. But this one, much like the Lions game to me, sort of feels like a, hey, guys, let's win and get out type of game. And when you have that type of mentality where you're not looking to win a game big, you're not looking to cover a number, sometimes you kind of hurt yourself a little bit with some complacency, with a little bit of hesitance. So I just think this number is way too high. I think Adam Gase maybe found something last week with the running backs catching more passes. I know Oakland's defense is awful, but I think maybe he found something schematically that he likes with Jay Ajayi out of the lineup. So this is just a number that's too high to me. I think it's a line value grab. And I think also situationally, I just don't expect Carolina to be as invested as you know, they're going to need to be to cover 9 points.
Yeah, and on top of that, Carolina's coming off of two big division wins between the Buccaneers and then the home game against the Falcons, where everyone was betting Atlanta. Panthers won that game outright. So, yeah, if there's ever kind of a little flat spot here in the middle of the season, it may be this non-divisional, not even a not even an NFC team here facing Miami, hosting Miami. I will say this: I was reminded. I thought I lost. I used Dolphins plus three in my head. I thought I lost that game. I realized that they went for two and got it, and I actually pushed in the contest using the Dolphins against Raiders last week. So I'm glad you brought that up. In my head, I thought I had lost it, but I'll take the push now. It's like a bonus half point I didn't know I actually had in my head. So now I'm happy. I'm good with the Dolphins. If you want to use them, they're on my good side again. So I think that's fine. Take the nine and run with it.
Yeah, and like I said, I mean, I think part of it, too, is, you know, you got a guy like Adam Gase, and he's been very frustrated, and he's done so publicly with his offense, and maybe Jay Ajayi was just a problem. Maybe he didn't, you know how to use him. Maybe he didn't in the run-blocking scheme, or he wasn't protecting in pass pro or something like that. I don't know, but, you know, I mean, he talked about how he liked using Kenyon Drake and Damian Williams out of the backfield here, and it's like the first compliment that he's had about this offense all year long. So maybe there is a little bit of something there. Maybe there is something that's going to change a little bit for this Dolphins team. And, you know, well, like I said, I think 9 points is too many. So the picks that are almost definitely going to be on my card here, barring any kind of weird injury situation or anything like that. And of course, obviously, as we found out last week, that's very much possible. The Buccaneers plus 2.5, Bills plus 3, Browns plus 12, Dolphins plus 9. So for those of you that are good at math, that's only 4. I've got one more game I got to pick out of my leans list here. And I'll just run down these real quickly, Cheeto, and if you got some thoughts on them, please feel free to throw them out there. But looking at the Chicago Bears minus 5.5, I don't know what this is going to look like for the consensus, but obviously we've seen that Green Bay is just not good offensively. The Bears defense is very good. It's a scary number with Mitch Trubisky, but Bears minus 5.5 could possibly make the cut here. Jaguars minus 3.5, they're number 9 in the rotation order. This one looks a little bit too easy to me, kind of like last week's against the Bengals. And the fact that the numbers come down a little bit does worry me. So I probably won't be on this one, but I will mention it here. Cross-country trip off the bye for the Chargers. Their offense is pretty one-dimensional, and Jacksonville can stop the pass. They can get after the quarterback, make Phillip Rivers uncomfortable. So Jacksonville might be, you know, maybe a play here in this one. And then the other one, Titans minus 4.5. And the only notes I have for this are Bengals blow, because they're just bad.
Yeah, you know, the thing that's interesting about the San Diego matchup is they're generally like bottom, I don't know, off the top of my head, they're probably bottom third, you know, in rushing efficiency, and that's how you have to beat Jacksonville. And Jacksonville's been so good defending the pass with their pass rush and just opponent yards per attempt against the pass, despite having a pretty weak rush defense themselves, that they still have the best overall defense now in the NFL. So if you're trying to throw on them, you're done, and you're doing that off of a bye. Maybe you've seen some things in film for 2 weeks that Rivers can take advantage of and exploit. I don't know. I kind of lean the Jacksonville side too, even though, and it seems like the Chargers kind of get bet every week because they never perform to supposed expectation. And so to see it come down doesn't surprise me. And I'm fine. If it's got the three, I'd definitely be buying Jacksonville, I think, is a bet. So I like that one as far as your leans go the most, even though you're worried because it has come down. The Chargers get bet every week. I wouldn't really sweat it. And I don't even think they've covered even half of their games. So, so far, betting against the Chargers team has been positive.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, like you said, that is a team. I don't know why it is. I don't know if it's Rivers. I don't know if it's the skill position guys they've had. I don't know if it's some of the big names that they have on defense with Bosa and Ingram. But, yeah, you're right. I mean, every year it feels like this is a team that somebody puts expectations on before the year. Season win total gets bet up. Somebody throws the Hail Mary on their futures, and they struggle to be 500. So maybe it is just one of those things. I don't know. But, Cheetah, you know, it's always a pleasure, man, to talk with you about the Super Contest. I thoroughly enjoy it. Good luck to you with your individual entry and your team entry here this week, and I'll talk to you again next week.
That sounds good. Have a good one.
Great segment there with Sports Cheetah from WagerTalk.com and also PodcastU.Vegas. And, you know, it's great to get the analysis from him on these games, and I'm always excited when my cards match up with his. But also the game theory side of the Super Contest is just so much fun. It's so fascinating for me, and, you know, that's why I love having it as a talking point. I mean, it's something that, you know, we'd obviously talk about even if we weren't in it because it's just so important to the industry. But then to have those different strategies, those different elements that are part of a contest like this, especially one that's this large, you know, I think that it's a whole lot of fun to talk about. I'm very, very excited for this week because this is, as I said at the top of the segment there, one of the cards I do like. Hopefully this is one of them where I like it and it comes through as opposed to liking it and winding up with a 1-4 or an 0-5. But again, my Bang the Book podcast entry, 24-21 here on the season, and hopefully could pull another 4-1 or maybe that elusive 5-0 here in week 10. One more segment left for this week on Bang the Book Radio. That is this week's version of the Odds Report with Brent from DSI Sportsbook. Whole bunch of college football games, bunch of NFL games as well. Just so many things to talk about here with a lot of marquee matchups in college football. Of course, some of those on the card here with sharp action. Some of them not. And then in the NFL, always a lot of different considerations. So here is this week's version of the Odds Report with Brent from DSI Sportsbook. All right, I'm joined now by Brent, a risk manager at DSI Sportsbook for this week's version of the Odds Report. Brent, how's it going, man?
Everything good. We're just turning the page on the college basketball season now, so our cup literally runneth over here.
Yeah, I will refrain from telling our listeners all the colorful language you had about starting college basketball season just because – And this is something that's got to be very interesting in your line of work. I mean, when you talk about these Saturdays in November with college basketball and college football and whatever's out there in the pros, and then obviously adjusting the NFL market, like those days just have to be insane. It'd be ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, there's no other word for it. And honestly, like when people, I kind of get a chuckle because people ask me like, oh, did you see that game or did you see that play or whatever? And I'm just like, I saw absolutely nothing but numbers running across the board.
I mean, do you see the screen in your sleep? Like you close your eyes and it just doesn't go away?
Yeah, I mean, nightmares. They're not dreamy thoughts. Yeah, no, I mean, honestly, it's just like the season is just, there's just so many games, especially like you talk about like the Wednesdays and Saturdays that are so full. And it's just, it's literally a grind because, I mean, obviously the volume's not what it is on a college football game, but you still got, you know, even more games to deal with. So it's quite a fight sometimes with college basketball for sure.
Just think if you lived somewhere with like an actual winter and you just had to look out the window on the 2 seconds you get every hour and just see snow flying around, you walk outside and you're freezing. I mean, it could be worse, right? At least you're in paradise to do this.
Yeah, no, there's, you know, we should be grateful for the fact that we keep busy, you know, idle hands make devil's work and such. So we're definitely on the right side of that.
All right, well, let's talk about some of these college football games that have seen some sharp involvement. And, of course, as luck would have it, it's a weekend that's full of marquee games, and we have one of them to discuss from a line movement standpoint based on sharp action. But we'll go ahead and run through these games here, beginning Saturday, beginning with game number 127, 128 on the board. In the SEC East, Florida takes on South Carolina, and we start with a total here this week.
Yeah, I mean, there was some sarcasm in your voice there in terms of the amount of games that we get to cover marquee matchups. But, I mean, you know, as we talked about off air, it's just like that, you know, the plays come in from the sharps and they find value wherever it is. I mean, sometimes we do get to talk about these marquee games, and sometimes they're just not, you know, they're just not played by the sharps and you don't see much line moving on them. So, you know, it is what it is, and the purpose of this show is to tell you where the sharp money is. And we'll start with the under on the South Carolina-Florida game. You know, South Carolina is, you know, decent team this you know, this time around. Florida obviously struggling. I mean, you know, I've said previously, I never really look at these plays and say, oh, you know, I like that, I don't like that, or whatever kind of stuff like that. And this one, obviously, you know, just with Florida's struggles, I mean, they haven't put up more than, I don't think, like 16, 17, 18 points in like their past four games, and South Carolina at home, Florida on the road, it's, I think it's going to be a tough spot for them to do that. So, you know, I kind of like the sharps on this one. You know, forever, that's not worth anything. I do have my wager count almost dead even. So again, like the public usually does bet over. So I'm pretty much even in terms of my actual individual wager count on this game. But I do have the total down to 43.5 based on that sharp action that they did bet under 45.5.
All right, well, we'll move to a real awesome game here that I'm sure our listeners are going to be thrilled to hear about. Game 149-150 between Middle Tennessee and Charlotte. And again, I mean, these are just the games that sharp guys have hit, and we're going to talk about those games because those are the games that we can use as a frame of reference here for this segment. But they're on the Middle Tennessee-Charlotte game. What side are they on?
Yeah, it's one of those cases where, you know, please don't shoot the messenger here. All we're doing is giving out the sharp plays that have come in. They are on this game as well, and they're taking the home dog here, Charlotte, when they're catching 14. So Charlotte plus 14 was the sharp side there at home to Middle Tennessee State. This line's down to pretty much 12.5, pretty much, you know, across the board. I do have action on the total as well that was sharp. Now, this has been, you know, quite a big move on the total. Sharps came in on this one on the over 44.5. We're up to in 50.5 right now, almost pretty much across the board. So that's a real big move on the total. I don't have, a big chart on this game, obviously. I have taken almost like three times as many more bets on Middle Tennessee State. Now, again, it's just not a huge wager count in terms of the actual individual number of bets I've taken. But still, it does suggest that the public is backing the road favorite. And I do have sharp action on the home dog, Charlotte, plus the 14. And again, like I said, the over 44.5 was also sharp, Adam.
So now when it comes to a game like this, and, you know, I mean, you've gone from 14 to 12.5, why not go lower? Because there's not going to be a whole lot of public involvement on this game, so it's going to be hard for you to get money back on Middle Tennessee State. Why not just protect against more Charlotte action?
Yeah, right now, I mean, it's still early. We're doing the show on Thursday. So, I mean, yeah, and again, too, if we're at 12.5, 12, and 11.5, how much is that really going to affect the market? Probably not a whole bunch. I figure everyone across the board, the whole screen could probably go 11.5, and nothing really is going to happen until you get down to, say, 11 and 10.5. It is a small count that favors Middle Tennessee State, so maybe there is some hope out there that maybe the public will back them a little more. But again, it's not like we're holding out a whole lot of hope that the public's going to get heavily involved in this game and start, you know, laying the chalk with Middle Tennessee State. So yeah, I mean, once you're off the 14, you're pretty much you're dealing with dead numbers. You know, once you're off 13 as well, obviously we blew right through that right away, sitting at 12.5 where we are right now. And again, this, you know, easy enough be down 11.5 and probably nothing more would happen in terms of the action being split differently.
All right, well, let's slide down just one spot on the board here to game 151-152. We'll go out to Colorado Springs where Wyoming takes on Air Force. Very interesting totals action in this game.
Yeah, I've got action on the over of this one. The sharp money came in on this one over 48.5. We're up to 53.5 right now. I think there's even some 54s out on the board there. And this is one of those cases where, you know, rarely it happens that I get more, more public bets on the under, but I do have that this week with the public betting the under just slightly. I mean, my wager count's almost just like 2-1 favoring the under, so nothing like extremely dramatic that way. You know, we talked about last week, we had the Air Force Army game. You know, that was one of the sharp plays with respect to the under. You know, we just didn't go low enough on that one. I think it closed like 54.5 and it stayed well under. So here we got a case where I do have the public going over, and, you know, the sharps going over this time around with the pub going against the public on the under. So hopefully that'll work out for us in terms of the action being split with public going under, sharp money going over. But yeah, this, I mean, quite a decent move on this one already. Like I said, I'm at 53.5. I see some 54s out there already, so it could be creeping up as well.
And, of course, the natural inclination when you have an option team like Air Force is to play the under because the clock's going to be running. They're going to move a few yards at a time. And also, from what I remember, and I think what really makes this action interesting, is that I'm pretty sure, Brent, that you and I have talked about some Wyoming unders throughout the year. And, of course, last week's game, it was, 16-13 against Colorado State. So again, I mean, maybe it's one of those spots where all the action leading up to this game priced the number a little bit too low at the open.
Yeah, you're bang on. You're right in that we've talked about Wyoming unders quite a bit this season. And again, yeah, you're talking about, you know, teams like Air Force that generally wear down the clock and stuff like that. But, you know, you talked about it before, too, when you're facing these offenses that you don't see a whole lot of sometimes. They can be tough to defend. And, you know, sharp guys, they just seem to find spots, and that's what makes them sharp. I mean, we'll see how this one turns out, but obviously long term they're going to be on the right side more than they're not. We talked about the kind of slight lean towards the under from the public, which is kind of like no surprise based on, you know, the things we just talked about.
All right, we'll stay in the Mountain West. We'll slide down one game here. Game 153-154, San Jose State takes on Nevada. Sharp action on the side for this one.
Yeah. San Jose State and Nevada. Let's try and get excited about this one. I think were they combined for two wins between them? And San Jose State's like 1-9, Nevada 1-8. So barn burner probably not, but value has been found with the road dog San Diego State. Plus 20.5 is where that came. Now this line had opened like around 19 and got bet up. Definitely just public money driving that number up. And again, we talk about sometimes, you know, whether public money can move a number. It definitely can, because you just don't know, you know, if sharps are going to get involved and at what point they might get involved. So you could have public laying a number like this with Nevada, say they started laying the 19.5, and sharps had not come in at all. So you still move basically, even though it's public action that's driving that number, just because, you know, what if the sharps happen to like Nevada as well? Well, then you're stuck at a number that you haven't moved on a whole lot of public action, and now you've got sharp action to go with it. So you always, you know, you are moving on public action for sure, especially when there's no sharp action involved up to that point. But we did get sharp action, like I said, on San Jose State at plus 20.5, and that's why we're back down to 18 now.
Yeah, and of course, there are so many considerations here at this time of year. I mean, for San Jose State, they have one win. They would obviously like to get two. For Nevada, same thing. They have one win. They'd like to get two, because you're running out of chances to actually win games here at this time of the year. So, you know, there are so many different considerations. We've talked about a lot of them here throughout the show on this week. Teams that are looking to get bowl eligible, getting steamed. Teams that have lost the chance at bowl eligibility, you know, not getting as much love in the betting market. So these are all considerations here at this time of the year. And of course, you know, who knows, you may see some steam on some of those other one win teams, like in Oregon State, for example, who's 0-6 in Pac-12 play. Maybe at some point here over the last few games, we see them take on a little bit of interest. All right. We do have one of the marquee games to talk about here this week. It is a big one in the SEC. 187-188, Georgia takes on Auburn. What was the sharp money here, Brent?
Yeah, I want to backtrack, because just going by rotation numbers, the one game that does fit in between the games that we're covering here so far is 165-166. Now, you know, I kind of, my process here in terms of looking at sharp guys, I kind of have guys who are you know, already on the list, and that list is about six people, six eight accounts right now. But there's other guys who I kind of keep track of who seem to be, you know, what I call pseudo sharp, who like may make the jump to the list next season kind of thing, just getting a kind of a feel for more action. And I do want to say that I did get what I'm going to call pseudo sharp action on Miami, Florida, the home dog versus Notre Dame, before we jump to the following game. So just something to look out for there as that line continues to drop down. If it goes back up, I think the sharps might grab Miami, Florida again. Again, this guy is not a list guy yet, so that's why we haven't talked about this game as, you know, one of the official steam plays or sharp plays so far. But Miami, Florida plus 3.5 is one to look out for. This one here with, yeah, Auburn. I mean, finally, like you said, we finally get to talk about one of these marquee games. And there's, you know, there's quite a few good games on the board this week, but so far what I have for sharp action, you know, is what we're covering here. And the home dog here, big game for Auburn, is where I got sharp action. So that's a good spot for us, because, you know, you just know you're going to get a ton of, I always do. I mean, then they're sitting there number one ranked right now, but tough spot with them on the road at Auburn. Auburn obviously is very tough, 10th ranked as well. Auburn plus 3 minus 05 is where I got that sharp action. And looking at my wager count in terms of the actual individual number of bets I've taken, it's almost 4-1 favoring Georgia. So that's a real strong count in terms of the number of bets I've taken favoring Georgia. So a lot of public money all over Georgia and sharp money on Auburn. So again, you know, I always, you know, I really like, in terms of booking, I always like these spots where I've got a whole lot of public money going one way and I got sharp money going the other way. It's, you know, a sharp public split. So obviously we're going to rest our nest egg with the sharps.
All right, we'll move down a few spots on the board here, but we will stay in the SEC. We'll go to the SEC East, and a lot of SEC movement here on today's show so far. But game 195-196 between Kentucky and Vanderbilt, some sharp involvement for this one.
Yeah, I've got sharp and public money on the dog on this one. That's the road dog, Kentucky. Sharp action came in on Kentucky plus 3 on this one. Vandy's now a 2-point favorite at home, so this line's dropped quite a bit. Kentucky, 6-3 on the road at on the road at Vanderbilt, 4-5. So Kentucky's one of those teams that I think the Sharps have done well so far this season. You know, kind of picking their spots with them, and they're on them. Like I said, plus 3 is where they came in. My wager count here, like I said, I do have slightly more public action that way as well. Wager count, it's almost 3-1 favoring Kentucky as well. So we've blown right through 3, sitting at 2 right now. Pretty much 2 across the board. I could see this one dropping even further.
All right, one more game to look at here on the college side of things. Then I'll just ask you some general stuff about those marquee games since we don't have any sharp action on them. That game here, 209-210 between UAB and UTSA. A little bit of a Conference USA matchup in this one. Some sharp action that may come as a little bit of a surprise.
Yeah, I got a sharp action on the home favorite here with Texas San Antonio. Minus 7 is where that came in. We're at minus 8 right now. UAB 6-3, Texas San Antonio 5-3. So probably, a decent game at least on paper. And again, not a whole lot of people are probably going to sit down and watch this one, but interesting game nonetheless. My wager count just slightly favors UAB, so just a small count, not even like 1.5 times into the actual individual number of wagers I've taken on UAB. So the home favorite, UTSA, minus 8 right now. Sharps in on them, minus 7. And again, not marquee games, but the Sharps play what they play. And again, we've talked before, if we have a thumb wrestling contest and the Sharps find a value on it, there's a line out there, they would bet it as well.
Yeah, and this is one of those games where bowl motivations may be a factor. UTSA needs a win to get to 1. They need a win to get to 6 games. UAB, who hasn't even had football over the last 2 seasons, already has 6 wins. Picked up their 6th last weekend. That is an angle that some people do look to play out there in the market. So maybe that'll be something that our listeners have to look at over the next couple of weeks here when we talk about these games with Brent. But Brent, as far as these marquee games are concerned, I know you mentioned some pseudo-sharp action there on Notre Dame and Miami. As of right now, which one's setting up to have the highest handle?
Let me just take a quick look through here. the Ohio State, Michigan State, that's clearly one that jumps out. But TCU, Oklahoma, that's another game that's real big for us right now. And again, that's, both in terms of the handle we've had on it and the individual number of wagers. I'm quite big on those ones. I mean, Ohio State, yeah, it's a big price for sure. They're at home right now, like minus 17.5 is what we have them, Ohio State at home to Michigan State. But in terms of handle, that's a real big game for us. I'm looking at my count on that one as well. Just take a quick look here. It's interesting on this one because I've got real good action both ways, but my wager count is almost like, when I say action on dollar volume, but my wager count is almost like 2-1 favoring Michigan State. So getting more bets on the whole road dog there with Michigan State. Looking at the other stuff here, let me down here with Notre Dame. We talked about that one already. That's the bigger game. And of course, TCU, we talked about it, as well, getting good two-way action on that one. My wager count there, almost like 2-1 favorite TCU as well. So considering I'm getting, decent action on the road dogs here, both TCU and Michigan State in two of those heavily wagered games.
Well, and I like to hear that. I like to hear that you're getting two-way action on these games. I'm sure you like to hear that as well. But I think it really illustrates the point to our listeners here that, these marquee games generally don't tend to have significant amounts of line value because there's a big handle on them, because these are teams that we know and we have some expectations for them. That's why I know we kind of joke about it and we make light of the fact that a lot of the games that we discussed are, group of 5, well off the radar types of games. But again, it illustrates that point that that's generally where the value is.
Yeah, and again, it's not the fact that anyone puts any less work in that, but I mean, it's talking about like an NFL team versus a top college team. You're just the unknowns and knowns are you've got so many more known factors between these teams that you've seen, and everyone's seen them on TV. Everyone's got a good feel for them. You're talking about guys who like 2-3 year starters and stuff like that versus these smaller schools where sometimes you're starting a rookie quarterback, you're running backs, stuff like that. So there's a lot more consistency in terms of these teams that we see on a regular basis. And obviously, the big schools are deep as well in terms of their depth and injuries and stuff like that have kind of less of an impact on them as well. So there's a whole lot of factors that come into play.
All right, we'll move over to the NFL Sunday here. And only 4 of these games popping up this week. So, again, we may get some late week sharp action. You want to make sure that you're following your odds screen and following the betting market for that type of thing. But we'll start with game 251-252. Minnesota takes on Washington. Sharp action on the total to kick things off in the NFL.
Yeah, I was going to say, Adam, it's a good point that you make in terms of watching the screen, especially as we get closer to game day. Last week is a classic example with the Giants, who were just absolutely horrible last week at home to the Rams. But I mean, the Giants early in the week, they were a sharp play at home. They were getting like 4.5 and 4-05 that the Sharps played them. The wager count was, even when we talked about on the show, the wager count very much favored the LA Rams. The public was all over them. So when the line kept creeping up on Sunday and closed at like 5.5 and 6, you need to know that if the Sharps played one way and the line kept going up the other way, generally speaking, once the Sharps have played, it's not public money that's going to drive a number back up, especially from like 4 all the way up to 6. So it was sharp money we took the other way on the LA Rams. Now, I mean, if you already put your bet down, there's not a whole lot you can do other than ride it out maybe or get off a bet. But if you watch the board and stuff like that, you kind of just know and trust that with the games we talk about here, if Sharps have played one way and the line tends to creep up another way, unless it's, say, maybe a Thursday night, Sunday night, Monday night game, generally speaking, it's going to be sharp money the way that drives that number back up. First game on the board to talk about here is the total between Minnesota and Washington. Under money has come in from the Sharps on this one, under 43. We're sitting at 42 right now. Minnesota, I mean, it's funny, they're not one of those teams that you talk a whole lot about, but, obviously a very strong team with a very good defense. Their offense and the quarterback changes and stuff like that hasn't really seemed to miss a beat. They lost their stud running back earlier this season, the rookie Cook. He looked fantastic, but still, Minnesota's sitting here with 4 wins in a row. 6-2 now on the road at Washington, so under 43 is where the Sharps come in. I don't think any teams put up like more than 20 points against the Minnesota defense since maybe week 2. I think that was Pittsburgh did that. I mean, I can barely remember what I had for breakfast this morning, but I think Pittsburgh did that to them and basically no one else since then. So Minnesota's defense has been awfully strong. Washington coming off the big win at Seattle last week, where their defense looked pretty good as well. So, kind of see some value sure in the under 43. We're sitting at 42 right now. Look at my wager count. That also actually favors the under, but just ever so slightly. The public, like I said, definitely is going to bet overs, but they're slightly going with the under on this one as well.
All right, we'll move down to game 259-260 between the New York Jets and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Sharp action on a side in this spot.
Yeah, I mean, Tampa Bay is just a mess here, sitting at home. They're out now a 2.5-point dog. I had sharp action on the Jets when this one was a pick. Now, it's tough to say whether this is, all value in terms of Winston being out. It looks like Winston's probably going to miss 2 games for that team. They're losing Evans, their star receiver, to suspension as well. I think he only caught like 1 pass last week as well. So it's tough to say star receiver when he only caught one pass last week. But value here with the Sharps on the Jets. Had a pick and we're all the way up to 2.5. A kind of side note that I, may or may not be interesting to you guys, but it's interesting for us is that the regular season on the Jets was probably easily the biggest decision we had in terms of regular seasons for the season, 4.5, and that line actually, we were under 4.5, like minus like 75 and stuff like that, ended up closing like minus 4, under 170. People were still betting the heck out of the Jets on the under. Here they are sitting at 4 wins, and they're favored on the road right here at Tampa Bay this early in the season. So if the Jets could get a 5th win right now, it would be, maybe not huge for this week, but it would be real big for our regular season wins futures on them.
Yeah, it means you guys are going to get extra nice Christmas gifts this year, right?
You're right, yeah. Yeah, the bosses always remember these things.
All right, well, let's move down to game 263-264 here. Real interesting game. We talked about this one in our Super Contest segment right before we had Brent on the air. The New Orleans Saints take on the Buffalo Bills. Sharp action, both side and total for this one.
Yeah, this is, talk about good spots for us. This is one now, again, assuming the Sharps are sharp for a reason and they're going to be winning long term. This game does set up well for us because looking at my wager count already, it's almost 3-1 favoring the road favorite New Orleans. We're using minus 3 dog 20 right now, and I do have sharp action on the home dog Buffalo plus 3 minus 05. So, having sharp money on Buffalo this early, and we do always often expect one-sided action favoring New Orleans. The public just always tends to like betting New Orleans. They also like betting New Orleans games over, and that's the case in this one as well. So I've got a wager count favoring the over, and I've got sharp action on the under as well. So I've got under 48.5 sharp action there on this game. We're sitting at 46.5 right now, so we dropped 2 points. And again, the side hasn't moved a ton, but we are sitting at minus 3, minus 120 from the plus 3, minus 05 that the Sharps bet early in the week. So definitely, obviously, we've talked about before the value in numbers, when you're laying, you know, minus 120 as you would have to now versus laying the 105, you know, that's almost like a 3% difference in terms of your break-even percentage. So, you know, a break-even at minus 105 is like just over 51. Break-even at 120 is like 54.5. So, you know, these things long-term really make a big difference in terms of the sharp guys. You know, when you look at the end of the year, looking at your ledger and how you did for the season. But Buffalo +3, minus 105. And like I said, I got a wager count almost 3-1 favoring the Saints. And I've got under 48.5 as sharp as well, sitting at 46 right now. I mean, and you know, I mean, New Orleans has won, you know, I think it's like 6 games in a row, and the Buffalo look, you know, they look quite poor at the Jets last week. So it's one of those cases that maybe that kind of be, you know, something that sticks in the public's mind in terms of how bad Buffalo looked and how New Orleans had looked so good for so long.
Are you going to be able to hold the 3 in this game, or do you think it comes down to 2.5?
It's going to be 3 in juice or 2.5 in juice. Yeah, I could see going out of 2.5 minus 120 or something like that, or 3 dog 20. You know, the public's going to bet New Orleans. That's just a given right now. So the only thing that would drive this back up to like 3 flat, I think, would be more sharp action the other way. But again, keep an eye out for that. I don't see it happening. I wouldn't expect that at all, especially with them being on the road.
All right, game 271, 272 will wrap things up for us here this week. That's the New York Giants taking on the San Francisco 49ers. This is a game that people will follow because of fantasy football and gambling, and that's pretty much it, unless you're dying to find out who's going to have a higher draft pick. But still, sharp guys finding value, not a big surprise.
Yeah, they found value with the Giants. You know, it's not a good looking game on paper. It's probably not one that you know want to sit down and watch for sure. I mean, I definitely will, if I have my choice, I won't be watching this one. But unfortunately, there's only like I think 3 games in the afternoon on Sunday, so it's going to be on the screen whether I watch it or not. We'll see. But yeah, I got sharp action on this one. They did play the Giants -1. They're on the road and a favorite. It's kind of odd when you find a spot where you've got the Giants -1 favorite on the road up to 2.5 right now, and they're sitting there at 1-7, 2.5, like -115, 2.5, -120 is where the juice is right now. So we haven't had to tip up to 3 yet. My wager count is almost like 2-1 favoring the Giants as well. So perhaps no surprise there. And I mean, San Francisco's sitting at 0-9, and you know, there was no idea or no thoughts that Garoppolo was going to start this week. I mean, he was never expected to start. I think if memory serves, the Niners are on a bye next week, so they kind of talked about after the bye that he might make his first start of the season. So he's definitely, you know, he was never expected to be out there. So this line movement didn't have anything to do with the fact that he's not going to be the starting quarterback for the Niners in this case. But, you know, the Giants, like I said, they were one of the sharp plays early last week. Later in the week, and then on Sunday, especially the day of the game, a lot of money came in and sharp money on the Rams. And the Giants were absolutely crushed. And now they head out to the road, West Coast, to meet San Francisco. But the sharp money, like I said, on the Giants, -1, 2.5 is -120 is where we are right now. And my wager count also slightly favoring the Giants.
I do have one question about a player, not necessarily a game, but obviously it carries over to the game. So Ezekiel Elliott's suspension, at least as of now, finally going to be upheld, and this has been a soap opera for several weeks here. You're already sitting on 3 with the Dallas-Atlanta game. So does the Elliott move really only mean an adjustment in the juice, or will that actually take the game off of 3?
No, I think, you know, you just move the number from 3 to like 3 -120, maybe 3.25, stuff like that. And again, I think this was kind of expected. Now, you never really know how these things are going to play out in the courts, but 3 -120 is where you go from this new 3 -1/4 perhaps, with Atlanta at home. And again, it was kind of expected that it was going to be denied. It's really tough. You know, you talk about this whole process in terms of how you handle these things when quarterbacks are out. We talked about last week with Watson. I think Deshaun Watson with Houston, of course, they're at home to the Colts. I think we were talked about the show. I think they were like an 11.5 point favorite before the news broke, and we figured he'd be like a 3.5 point, you know, value to the number, which takes you down to, you know, like around 8 and, you know, 7.5, something like that in that neighborhood. And that line, I think it reopened like around 7, got bet down to 6. And of course, I mean, the Colts won that game outright. So it's one of those things where you kind of do your best in terms of opening up the right number. You take your, you know, risk management wise, you take your wager limit and basically cut that down in a half until the number kind of feels, you know, kind of feels its way through where it's going to be a number that settles, and then you open that back up to full limit. So you definitely have to, you know, be cautious in terms of opening these things and see where the money's going to come in. Now again, the fact that the Cowboys are the Cowboys, you pretty much feel comfortable, at least I do, in that the fact that regardless of whether he's going to play or not, we're going to get more bets in terms of public action on Dallas. So what you're kind of protecting against at this point is the sharp action coming in. So 3 minus 120, I think, is where you're going to see this game open up, and it might go up to 3.25, and who knows from there.
Well, Brent, risk manager down at DSI Sportsbook. Great to chat with you again this week, man, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Have a great weekend.
Really fascinating stuff there from Brent on today's show as we wrap up another excellent week of Bang the Book Radio. Coming up on our Monday edition of the show, we'll be joined by Joe Everett of NFL Draft Bible for our NFL Week in Review and Monday Night Football preview. Then hopefully Kyle Hunter will be healed enough from his illness to join us for the Week 12 College Football First Look. Crazy to think it's already Week 12. Crazy to think that we're in the middle of the month of November. But time flies when you're having fun, and we have a lot of fun here on Bang the Book Radio. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. Have a happy, healthy, smart, safe weekend, and I will talk to you again on Monday.